Lecture 5, All is Suffering.
In our last lecture, we talked about the life story of the Buddha. We talked about his birth in the kingdom that's now in the region of southern Nepal, and we talked about his renunciation and all of those events that led up to his enlightenment, and finally, of course, to his great teaching career, where he converted quite a large number of people, it seems, in retrospect, and began to put together that community that was the nucleus of the Buddhist tradition. As I mentioned right at the end of the lecture, the death of the Buddha left his followers with a difficult problem. During his life, the Buddha had not only been a source of authority for the community, a source of teaching, a source of discipline and doctrine, and all of those things that made the Buddhist tradition in that time the beginning of a great world religion, but he also had been a focus of veneration and of worship for many of his followers, particularly for his lay followers. So when the Buddha died, he left the realm of rebirth altogether, was no longer reborn in this world, and really, in many respects, was no longer available for any kind of intervention or any kind of worship. What was left to fill the void? That's really the key question. What was left after the Buddha died that could fill the void left by his absence, by his death? Buddhists traditionally have given two answers to this question. For those who wanted to venerate or to worship the Buddha left behind what's called the form body. Initially, this form body was comprised simply of the relics of his cremation. As I mentioned last time, when he died, his body was taken by his lay followers and was wrapped in certain elaborate ways and set up on a cremation pyre and burned. When the fire was out and the cremation was finished, they took the relics of the cremation and distributed them to a number of lay disciples, and these were set up in reliquary mounds to serve as the focus of worship. Over time, any physical representation of the Buddha came to play the same role, including objects that the Buddha touched, places he visited, or even, as time went on, images of the Buddha's form, physical representations of the Buddha's form. In the past, probably around the 3rd or 4th century of the Common Era, one of the most important shrines in the whole Buddhist world was the shrine that was set up in what is now Pakistan to set up as a place of worship, the Buddha's begging bowl. So any object that was associated with the Buddha was potentially a focus of worship. These objects all represent, in one way or another, the form body of the Buddha, his continuing physical presence in this world. For people who wanted to follow the Buddha's example, he left behind what's called his Dharma, his teaching. The teaching that expressed the content of his awakening and showed the way for others to achieve this awakening themselves. Now, out of this distinction, this simple distinction in the Buddhist tradition between the physical body of the Buddha and the body of his teaching, came the distinction between two bodies of the Buddha. If you have studied Christian theology, you know that there was a lot of discussion in the Christian tradition in the early years, in the development of that religion, about the two natures of Christ. Christians say that Christ is fully human and also fully divine. Now, you might imagine that this distinction between the two Buddha bodies is, in a way, similar to that Christian distinction between the human nature of Christ and Christ's divine nature. The Buddha has two bodies, physical body, form body, that arises and passes away, I suppose you could say, like the human nature of Christ. And the Dharma body is eternal and doesn't change. But it's important, actually, not to carry this comparison too far.